Rivers Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome in on this Thursday. Marty's at the job fair. Chris Baker is in for the first half hour today on MSG and WGR Sports Radio 550. Hi, Bakes. How you been hitting them?
Fairly straight. Fairly straight. Still can't putt, but hey, thanks for having me today. It's always nice. This is the time of year. I got to start retraining my brain. Mm-hmm. Get ready for hockey season. So I'm looking forward to chatting with you here.
Two visits in close proximity here for you and me and our crew on Sabres Live as we are less than a month away from the preseason opener, which is Buffalo-Pittsburgh at KeyBank on the 21st of September. And then not too long after, we'll be talking about Europe and the opening of the regular season and where Buffalo could, should see its greatest impact from young players. So I've created just this, you know, we live in this sortable world statistically, but I think more often than not, when people want to look at a team's younger players, they kind of go 23 and under. Am I wrong? Like, it sounds like 23 and under is like a good barometer, right?
100%.
You get guys that are probably just experienced enough that you've seen a taste of what they can do, and you're in full projection mode as to where they can go from where they are right now. The Sabres still have a ton of these players, 23 and under, some who barely scratched the surface in the NHL, others like Dylan Cousins, already approaching almost 300 NHL games. So if you're sitting here August 22nd, who are you looking at among this kind of group of 23 and under that can really step up and be a season changer? Let's put it that way, for the Sabres this year.
I would say it starts for me with a healthy Jack Quinn. And I understand that he's been skating a lot, getting ready for the season, down there almost every day, working with the skating coaches. And for me, you know, I go back to Quinn's breakout season 2 years ago and said, okay, this is a guy, he had the opportunity to process what he just saw. He knows what it's going to take now to become a 30-goal scorer in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And I love the way he shoots the puck. I love the way he battles. He has all the tools. He just needs to stay healthy. He's the guy that it starts with me, because, you know, we saw Cousins kind of get it back on track at the end of last season. I think he's poised to have a very big season. But for me, it's like, who's going to score the goals? Who's going to get that goal differential back up and the positive in the green? When you look at the NHL.com standings, then it starts with Quinn. For me, honestly, he's a guy who can really fill the net, because we know he can do it.
Are you set in stone to a certain extent as to who he should be playing with?
Yeah, I'm not disrupting how they ended the season. Okay. And this impacts where you put Jason Zucker, because I still put Zach Benson up there. It was Benson, Cousins, Quinn at the end of last season, I believe. And that's kind of how I like having, you know, unless, you know, Jiří Kulik comes in and just blows you away and blows up that whole dynamic of how you look down the middle. But I like the Cousins and Quinn handcuff there. And they're going to have to rotate that left side and figure out who can fit their best. But I do like Benson right now, because I think Benson's another guy who could take a pretty big leap here. Same reasons that I just said, Duffer. He just had a whole season to process it. He had a little bit of time to sit down, came back. Did he have some off nights? Yeah. But I kind of like that handcuff of Cousins and Quinn.
Yeah, I think it's important, certainly for both, but for Dylan too, to have, you know, that chemistry. Dylan just unfortunately fell into a too large of a group last year that weren't able to get right back to that same number, you know, from the previous year. But I do think that he's in a good, I kind of stumped Marty yesterday. And now maybe I've stumped myself moving forward, because I basically threw out, I'm not married to any pairing or line combination at this point, because we were briefly talking about like who's with Thompson and Tuck yesterday. And I said, A, I don't know if they have to be together, and B, if they are, like, part of me just wants to throw Zucker up there and then balance out the other two lines, you know, with all this young talent. So I don't know. I'm seeking input.
Well, here's the thing, okay, with Cousins, I think I have a theory on him, and I think he may have even addressed this somewhat in his postseason availability, where I think he was a young player. He wants to be a leader because he's a natural born leader. And I think he took on a lot, maybe too much. And I think having the rest of the, how they added in free agency with Malenstein and bringing in Obe Kubel and Lafferty, these are guys that can play maybe a similar role and do some of that lifting that maybe Cousins felt he had to take upon himself last year. So now if you have a little bit more leadership spread out, Dylan can play his game. I'm with you on the familiarity. Like, say they put Zucker up top and you kept Tage at center. By the way, Tage is a centerman right now, but does he have to be moving forward? That's another question, right?
But come on, why would we
Hey, listen, if you want to blow it up, you want to go full blender, let's go full blender, okay? But say you have Tage at center with Tuck and you put Zucker up there, then you have Paterka, Cousins, Quinn. You get the band back together from a couple seasons ago, and that's not a bad situation for the Sabres to be in either.
Right, but when you sound as optimistic as you do about Benson, and for good reason, like, does Benson turn whatever line he is on into a more balanced offensive line as opposed to, you know, he's still at 30 points, not playing high up, obviously, but he did play more than 70 games, so he got more than the taste. Like, you know me, I'm like, give me three lines that can score at least. Like, that's kind of where I'm at. And I know that may fly in the face of, you know, some conventional wisdom right now, but yeah, I don't know. Like, can Zach have the impact you want him to have if he's on the third line?
I mean, he can, but that's also why I kind of like having Zucker down there to kind of maybe add some of that pop, like a little bit more proven track record of getting to the net and scoring goals. I like him down there, say Greenway's on the opposite side. And, but here, I just like having Benson managing those minutes with a Cousins as your second centerman because he plays such a responsible game. And again, it's all about the processing. That's what he was lauded as a draft prospect. Now he has a whole season of input and data where I'm expecting him to come out. And that's where I'm penciling him to start. I think he's, I hate to say Swiss Army knife because we say it, it's overused, right? He's kind of like that. I think you can put Benson anywhere, technically, in this lineup.
There are other forwards. Roseanne, Paterka still falls into the under 23 and under. I know you're ridiculously high on him, so maybe that separates him from the rest of this group, i.e. he was almost at 30 goals last year. So, but Cousins was over 30 a couple of years ago too. So I kind of, I'm very curious as to see whether any of these other names, it's unlikely Oslin and Wahlberg or Hellenius at the NHL level, but one should never close the door. But I think what I'm most interested in is that you immediately gravitated to forwards. When my fixation now on the 23 and under and franchise changing and thus in-season changing here, I think it's Owen Power. I think if Owen Power plays at a much higher and or let's say equal to his draft pedigree level, which is a first overall pick, I think this, and this is not to put any like stupid pressure on the kid, I just think he's capable of an awful lot more. And it's his third full year, and if he goes like this, wouldn't the team be very likely to follow, in your opinion?
Oh, 100%. And I think the things that we're saying about Owen Power right now and trying to project him are a lot of the same things that we said about the player that he was compared to in his draft year when he was in his third year. And that's the guy that's a big 6 foot six, six, what is he, 6'7" down in Tampa, Hedman. Okay. And I'm not trying to say, but we waited a while for him to figure it out, understand how big he is, understand how physically dominant he can be without blowing guys up, but using his physical gifts to make an impact, to win pucks. But that's not the hallmark of his game. Owen Power is a very good offensive player, but it's going to start, I think, with him getting the confidence and winning battles in the defensive zone. That's the thing I'm looking forward to. I don't disagree with him being the guy that you circle on your under 23. I don't know. You probably have a spreadsheet knowing you, Duffer.
No. just terrible handwriting. That's it.
No, but I get where you're going with that completely. But I've, you know, I have a lot of patience for him just because we've seen similar players of the talent level and size take a little bit of time. They're no different than goaltenders sometimes. I hate to say it. But yeah, he's got that first overall tag. It does come with pressure, whether you want to place it on him or not. So I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. I think that as he goes, the team probably will go this season.
Jordan LaBarber is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Jordan will get into some early, you know, training camp storylines and things of that nature. We have a little mailbag opportunity on the website right now at sabres.com to submit questions. So we'll build off of that. So I don't want to completely railroad Jordan's segment, but who do you think Power is best to be paired up with among this current group?
I still can't figure this out. I think we may have even touched upon this the last time we were together, and it boils down to, I'm going to work backwards, okay, from the bottom, because I think if you look at a Clifton-Samuelson pairing down there, you're probably okay, even though Samuelson, I think, could play up top, right? So that leads me to say, okay, we saw Joki Haru end the season with Dahlin. Lindy had some nice, he mentioned Joki Haru in his press conference too, right? As like one of these young players that, I don't know, if I'm connecting dots, he seems to like, that leaves me with Bo Byram and Owen Power. Now, I think a lot of people want to see Byram with Dahlin, and rightfully so. You want to talk about not being married to anything and trying out every combination. They could look like the Amerks in preseason. We talked about the Amerks, different line, different defensive pairs every night. Probably going to see a lot of that shuffling around here in the first stretch of the season, definitely in the preseason, as they try to figure out who. Right now, I go Byram to answer your question in a very roundabout way.
And he also falls into that category, Bakes. He's 23 and under, just on the cut line right now. And I think based on more so, you know, the lack of team success down the stretch last year, I think it left a lot of people wondering, well, how will Byram most likely be able to impact this team moving forward? So what is it you see in his game that, you know, is it like a complementary piece to one of these aces, like a Power and a Dahlin? Or could we still see, in your opinion, like a big year from Bo Byram, where people are going, holy cow, this is ridiculous how much offensive talent they have on the blue line?
I like the way the aesthetics looked when he was playing with Dahlin. They can switch off left and right. They flowed really well together. I think sometimes their metrics maybe were a little uneven night to night, but they also had some tough matchups, right? Just the nature of the beast when they're out there usually trying to shut down the opposition's top line. But he also could be that Dahlin light in terms of that mobile guy that can really move the puck and add a lot of motion in the offensive zone. And that's where, going back to your point, if Owen Power goes, right, then you have a lot more flexibility with how you use Bo Byram. I see Bo Byram, though, as a guy, we've seen him be a play driver from the back end early in his career in Colorado. He saw a little bit of it here and there as he adjusted. But I see him as that guy that is really going to be that play driver moving forward. I just love his handle on the puck, and I love what he does when the play gets up in the offensive zone. He breaks down the box. He breaks down the defensive shell, and it creates opportunities and seams, and he's a great passer of the puck. We saw that in his very brief stint here at the end of last season. So I love his two-way look to his game. And again, is that more of the same? I mean, that could be, if he plays with Power, it could look very much how it looked when he played with Dahlin.
Right.
Maybe that could be that flow, but I have to see it.
For obvious reasons, namely the title of the show, Sabres Live, we focus more on the Buffalo prospects. But in the context of an offseason, you're constantly looking at your rivals and the change that they undergo. You can't omit veteran signings and additions, but for the sake of the exercise that we're on here and the 23 and under crowd, roughly, like when you look around the division, let's say, and what Buffalo is immediately up against most often on the schedule, the likes of being lumped in with the Montreal, Detroit, Ottawas of the world that are still trying to get in and then try to tear down the Torontos, Tampas, Floridas, Bostons of the world. Like, who are the other young players within the division that you would see as impactful and maybe even still under the radar? And that's the thing. Like, we tend to blow up, obviously, the Buffalo names, but the fact of the matter is everyone is trying, and a lot of them perhaps have more talent, emerging talent, than what you might think.
Yeah, there's two players that kind of come to mind when you think about this, because I look at the divisions as a whole, and I think that like Ottawa did pretty well this year, just like adding to their role players. Mm-hmm. You know, they picked up Michael Mattia, who I love. Mm-hmm. But really, there's a player there who I think is going to come back this season. He missed half of last year, and I think he's going to have a big season this year. And I know he's already, I think, been a 20-goal scorer, but I think Shane Pinto is going to have a chip on his shoulder this year. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny because I think the shoulder of another player ahead of him on the depth chart is probably going to play a role in how he functions this year with Josh Norris, right?
Yeah.
Pinto, I think, though, I love this player. I think he's going to have a pretty big year. I look at him as going to be a key on a pretty decent forward group there in Ottawa. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you really call that a breakup, but there's another player.
No,
you
it's,
know,
when, I think he fits. I do think he fits. Yeah.
When you look at, I don't, you know, it was funny because earlier, like Montreal was pretty quiet, right? Mm-hmm. Start the offseason, and then they made the big trade. And when you look at their roster, you know, especially their forward grouping, Slafkovský had a nice end of the season up there with Suzuki and Caulfield up top. And now if Kirby Dach comes back healthy and you put Laine on the right side, I think that left winger, I think Newhook, Alex Newhook, I think could have a very big season. He had 13 goals, 14 goals, goes to Montreal, had a little bit of an injury shortened season. He probably played a little over 50 games last year, had 15 goals. He's probably like a 25 to 27 goal scorer, honestly. Super talented. Lit it up in college, was always a prolific scorer, just an offensive producer, all coming up 15, 16, 17, 18 years old. That's a guy that I look at right now as a secondary layer in Montreal's attack that could really move their needle. And we talked about goal differential. He could be one of those guys that really lessens that gap. They got to get the goaltending too, right?
They do. And we may get to that in the topic of Askarov coming up and his situation in Nashville. But when you look at, I know they just moved one of them and Harris in the Line A deal, but do you not look at Montreal as incredibly rich on the prospect blue line?
Well, for sure. I mean, it's not just Caden Gooley. I mean, even when you go down to like Struble and some of these other guys that we've seen in the prospect challenge, they got guys coming up that we haven't even
Hudson,
really seen.
Right. Yeah.
Hudson's going to be there. Yep.
Reinbacher. And like, I think they have an incredible, incredible, logjam, for lack of a better term. Like, I think they will be able to utilize this to their advantage and perhaps very quickly.
Similar to Buffalo, like we just talked about with all these young guys, but a different flavor, a different look, different skill sets. Yeah. And, you know, they still have Savard, I think, there is that kind of the elder statesman to kind of mix
him
in
and Matheson,
and block shots and do all that.
Yep.
So, you know, he's a guy that can help bring those young guys along. But no, you're right on the money there. I think that they're a team that, you know, maybe a lot of fans haven't thought about because they finished low in the standings last year. But when you look at the division as a whole, like Florida, they kept their forward core intact, but I think their defense is going to be tested on many nights, their depth anyways. Mm-hmm. And who knows what they're going to do moving forward with Ekblad, right? I mean, losing Montour, they lose OEL. I think when you look at the teams that finished above the Sabres, Toronto may have done decently.
Actually, well, sure. Yeah.
Right. With how they bolster their blue line.
Yeah.
With Ekman Larson and Tanev. I mean, it's going to change. Mm-hmm. That's always been like the missing link up there. They've loaded it forward, you know, because all they'd really lost was Bertuzzi. But I look at the teams underneath the Sabres, you know, Ottawa and you mentioned them all, Ottawa, Montreal. But then another breakout player real quick and a young defenseman who I think we should really be looking at in Detroit is Simon Edvinson.
Thank you. Yes.
Sixth overall. I think that he's set. Like, he hasn't gotten full traction yet.
Mm-hmm.
Kid, it's a monster. He's got the wingspan and he can skate. And, you know, they have Sider going. He's moving and grooving. He's just doing his thing. But Edvinson, I think, is a big piece of the puzzle there. I didn't mind what Detroit did this offseason. You know, they re-upped Kane and added Tarasenko. But Edvinson taking that next step, I think, is going to be crucial to them being a team that really pushes Buffalo.
Agreed. I think that's obviously we all sit here with the assumption that they're going to get the Sider and Raymond deals done. It is taking an awfully long time, but I don't know, based on, you know, what happened with Edmonton and St. Louis, like, I'd be wanting to get the RFAs locked up rather quickly here. But anyway,
Thomas Harley too, out in Dallas, by the way, right? I don't want to jump off.
Oh, I know.
He's another one. Like, what's going on there?
I know.
A smart GM might start saying, do I dip into the Armstrong bag of tricks here? But I don't want to get you off track, but that was one I was thinking about. I was like, wow, how is he not done?
I know. By the way, speaking of young defensemen, did you think the Bruins found something in Mason Laurie last year? I mean, 6'5", you know, they've had turnover there on the blue line. They need their, you know, they need that. They need like Tampa, like every now and again, you just need a surprise there to fill the gaps because you're constantly up here in the standings. Right. I thought he was, his season got derailed due to injury, but Poitras up front, right? Like they might have a couple of things happening there in Boston.
No, you keep waiting for them to just fall. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're getting older every year at the top, but they do find ways to find that cheap help. It's no different than Tampa, right? Like a Mitchell Chafee could be a guy in Tampa that just takes off if he gets an opportunity. Mm-hmm. But I think Lowry, no, great player, great skater. We saw him here in the, last September, looked good. Mm-hmm. I wasn't surprised just following him along on his journey as a prospect. He was always real smooth and competitive and just did his job not surprised to see him. I think they found a good one.
Yes, and of course, they need to get the Swayman deal done there in Boston. Beyond that, let's focus on the goaltending with Askarov specifically, because he's a name that is now out there on the cusp of, you know, training camp, the foreseeable future with Nashville, which has UC Saros long-term and Scott Wedgwood short-term. Marty was miffed at why his camp would make a big deal about not reporting to Milwaukee at this point in time. Like, how about just go to Predators camp and try to earn the Predators job and then not worry about Milwaukee? But he's obviously staring at the Saros roadblock. So that being said, Askarov is 6'4". He's got a couple of good AHL seasons under his belt. He was a first-round pick, 11th overall in 2020. How do you project Askarov? Should Nashville be willing to move him right now? What teams should be suitors for him right now based on their current goaltending stables?
It gets really interesting when you go through all the machinations of the Askarov situation, because I do think he's the talent level is there. Mm-hmm. He's a bona fide, to me, starting NHL goaltender at some point down the road. Not yet. I want to see him rise to the occasion when the pressure's on. Mm-hmm. Until he does that, that's like the last little box that I think he needs to check for me. I think that there's a lot of teams that should be looking at him. The one that, and first of all, I don't want to parrot Marty. I did miss his take on this. So you said he was miffed. I agree. The kid should go to camp and compete. And a lot of times I know your org two will be your AHL one, and maybe that's how it would end up, but he could better his own situation, just go and just have a chip on his shoulder and be better than Saros in camp.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why not? Just go and do it, compete. That's the nature of the beast. No jobs are handed to you anywhere. But you know, the one team that I keep looking at as far as like, it just makes sense to me just where they're at, and they're kind of rebuilding and they got a lot of young talent, the skaters position. They got a lot of capital at San Jose. I think that I know they have Blackwood and they have Vanacek. This is a young player. He's what, 22? Mm-hmm. Askarov. He could grow with that younger group that's developing. They got a lot, it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, kind of like a lot of the things that you hear Kevin Adams say when he's looking at add players. Mm-hmm. Guys he can bring in, they fit that core group. That makes sense to me. I know you have one, another Western team.
Well, I got many.
Yeah, I know you have one, but like the San Jose one to me makes a lot of sense. I see Jersey connected. Like, really? I think the media is kind of, but you know, I don't know. You know, I mean, maybe, but it's going to be more of the same.
I mean, if Markstrom only had 1 year on his deal, I would have been more likely to push on that angle. San Jose has multiple first-round picks, so you have to think of it as, what is Nashville going to realistically want in return? I would assume they'll take a first back, call it a day, and if teams are happy with that, well, if you're putting it that way, teams that have firsts at their disposal, meaning multiples, Calgary, Chicago, San Jose. Now, Utah doesn't have a surplus of firsts, but they have 10 picks in the first three rounds over the next 2 years.
Yeah,
so they could literally trade like 5 seconds for this guy, right? So they don't have much. Like, there might be an opportunity for Askarov to come in and just take it in Utah right now, right? Like, you've got Vemelka and Ingram, and I know they've retooled their defense, and it's exciting first year and all the rest of it, but Columbus, to me, should be in on it. Montreal should be in on it. They have two firsts as well. Vancouver, based on some Demko conjecture as to his health, and my wild card in all of it, Washington.
Washington always, and not just because of the nationality.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you. They're sneaky, and they just, that's a team, they will not go away.
They got Logan Thompson on his final year, and they got Charlie Lindgren on his final year. And I get all due respect to Hunter Shepherd and everything he's done for the Bears and their Calder Cups win the last 2 years, but he's not first round pedigree. And unfortunately, that tends to shape some pathways for some people to the NHL. So yep. I don't know. You think he'll get traded?
I think he'll get traded eventually. I think Trotz will pull the trigger.
Yeah.
But I think he's also going to be a little patient. Like, he's not going to have a young goalie prospect force his hand ever. Mm-hmm. But let's see how his attitude, like the attitude, you got to see him come into camp. It's easy to judge based on reports and not hear the player talk and not see him in action. Let's see him get into camp. Let's see him be a professional, you know, and like, and if he's bettering his position in the eyes of other teams, that makes Barry's job a lot easier to move him and get the return that he commands. All the teams that you mentioned, like Calgary, I just don't think that they would block Dustin Wolf's path. I think they really like him.
Mm-hmm.
The other team that I see media types talk about, which to me, it doesn't make sense, Colorado, because they just drafted a really good young goaltending prospect, another Russian, Ilya Nabokov. And I think that kid is legit. And he's 21 years old right now. So he's got one more year. He's going to play for Magnitogorsk, and then he'll probably come over and he could be just as impressive of an NHL prospect out of the box when he gets here as Askarov is, even though he wasn't taken as high in the draft and didn't come with all the accolades at a young age that Askarov did.
No question. So
You didn't mention him. I just see others talking about it.
Yeah, no, we've talked enough about what is Georgiev, you know, after leading the NHL in wins the last 2 years. But yeah, he's going to play himself into a situation where he needs a new deal. Anonen was good last year as the backup. So it's high expectations. Sometimes you gamble. I wouldn't exclude Colorado from the conversation.
I like your Washington and Utah assessments the best. Mm-hmm. Of all the ones that you threw out there, just kind of marinating on them here for a minute.
Yeah.
Both of those make a lot of sense. That Utah one makes a lot of sense.
Thank you for circling around on Colorado. On my list, I started to write them, then I crossed them out, but you've convinced me that I should have had them on there all along. All right, Bakes. I know there's more FedEx golf to watch, early returns on round one of the, what do they call this? Is this the second to
this
last
is the tournament? BMW championship out of Castle Pines. So I dipped into my, in honor of Duffer, I dipped into my Canadian bucket here and a little Taylor Pendrith action, but I saw that he took a bogey, started off pretty warm, and we'll see how he does today. But I looked at the first round leader teeing off early. So we'll see how he pulls through here.
Sounds good. We'll pay attention to that and have you back on soon. Thanks, Bakes.
Thanks, Duffer.
There he is, Chris Baker. Sabres prospects, folks, we've got FanFest coming up. This is always a hit in mid-September. This year, it ties in nicely with Prospects Challenge. It's presented by Coca-Cola Zero Sugar. Of course, fun hockey games, skills challenges, player appearances, autographs. It all runs in conjunction with Hockey Fest, which is the street hockey tournament on Saturday, September 14th in Alumni Plaza. All the details at sabres.com. Speaking of, lead writer for said website, Jordan LaBarber, next on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
The lead horse on Sabres Live is running wild this weekend, I believe in the bluegrass state. That would be Marty Baron, but not before Marty laid down some killer acting chops in one of the latest promos available on Sabres social channels as it pertains to a job fair today. Now, the lead actor from Sabres.com And man, has he starred in some roles over the years. Jordan LaBarber is with us. Jordan, what was your acting experience like with Marty in this most recent quest to get people to head over to the job fair at KeyBank Center today?
Yeah, I mean, speaking of jobs for Marty, what people, you see him acting in that promo. What you don't know is he was director, he was producer, and he demands a lot out of his talent. So I had to find a motivation for my character. I had to watch a lot of classic cinema. At the end of the day, I liked take 38. He went with take 47, but it ended up being a pretty good promo for Saber's jobs.
I had no idea, right? Like my portion was recorded offsite, so I was not actually in the trenches when everything was being filmed. I had no idea how many cameos from our coworkers would be involved in all of this. And the one takeaway, though, was from our videographer, Scott Balzer. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, oh my gosh, Marty's hair is ridiculous these days. And so I hadn't quite noticed, because as you know, we're often wearing caps on this show. Mm-hmm. And when he said it, I was like, oh my, I wonder, like Marty was adamant that he had to go get a haircut. And now I know why, because he probably thinks he looked ridiculous in this promo, but it was pretty good. You and him had a pretty intense stare, I would say.
Like I said, you know, that was the motivation for my character, was that I had a bad day. I'm going through security and here's Marty Baran, you know, giving me a hard time. So it was just a summation of everything my character had been through prior to what you see on screen.
Well, you're also the guy who's done long and short walks on the beach with Rasmus Dahlin at All-Star and things like that. How do you look at the characters that are on this Sabres roster as we get within less than a month of Prospects Challenge, less than a month now of the preseason beginning, and the storylines that may or may not be emerging in your head and or online at sabres.com? Take us through what you're kind of working on right now.
Yeah, we're trying something new over at the website. Actually, we put out a call for questions today for our first sabres.com mailbag. So we're going to be trying to answer some fan questions ahead of the start of training camp and in a few weeks away from training camp, but answering the questions a little bit before then, which has us thinking, you know, what are the questions going into this camp? It's an interesting scenario this year where a lot of the team has returned. You have a few incoming veterans who you would imagine will play. So a lot of the stuff can seem like it's set, but as we know, storylines tend to appear that you maybe weren't expecting. You think back to last year, you know, 13th overall, Zach, but that draft position usually doesn't make the roster. He scores preseason game number one, and all of a sudden, you know, the dominoes start falling until he plays over 70 games. Or a couple of years ago, I believe it's you and I sitting in the stands at the arena, and one of us looks at the other and says, is Tage playing center? Oh, maybe, you know, it's a fill-in for, well, he never left, you know, and he scored 30 goals 3 years in a row. Mm-hmm. So you start to wonder, what will these storylines be?
Do you think you would be thinking about them the same way if there hadn't been a coaching change, i.e. how wide open is everything right now because of Lindy's return?
I definitely think it adds a whole new dynamic, because in two ways. Personnel, he's going to be getting to know these players for the first time. He might see things differently in terms of a lot of these guys are versatile to play center or the wing. Maybe you see changes there. Maybe guys who have been in bottom six roles get chances in the top six. And then beyond personnel, what is this team going to look like? What's the style of play going to look like? What's the power play structure going to look like? For any fans, if there are open practices, I believe it'll be surreal to see Lindy Ruff running Sabres practices, just to see how he's communicating with players, how he's changed from, you know, stories we've heard from alumni, from how he used to coach. That'll be interesting to watch too.
Do you think it would, I can never use the word easy, but based on living through the challenges of last year, do you think Buffalo's power players will be able to find a way back to the success they had a couple of years ago quickly. Do you think that, I guess there's a couple of ways to look at it. Not only new head coach and Lindy Ruff, obviously you have Seth Appert elevated from Rochester now as an assistant with the Sabres. But I tend to look at stuff like this, with all due respect to the coaches, as player driven. So when I identify top unit and second unit power plays, do you just look at this and think that they will be able to get back to that level on their own, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, so you look at some of the individual skills the Sabres have offensively, and it speaks to the potential of a good power play. You've got elite shots. I mean, you've got one of the game's elite shots with Tage Thompson, but even on that other flank, you know, J.J. Paterka's shown glimpses of having a good one-timer. And then Rasmus Dahlin at the point, he's as creative as it gets. So, you know, maybe a new perspective coaching is what it takes for the cohesion, you know, amongst all those skills. And, you know, we have Seth Appert running the power play this year. It's a different look. I'm sure Lindy Ruff will have philosophies. He described it as a, you know, a team effort there. But one thing that Lindy said about the power play was emphasizing the bumper position as, you know, maybe the most important spot on the ice. And you think about who was there a lot, you know, Jeff Skinner was in that position before. So it automatically creates a vacancy in, you know, what the new coach is deeming to be the most important spot on the power play. So I think that's going to be interesting to watch, is who settles in there, you know, particularly on the top unit. First name that comes to mind to me is Jack Quinn, guy who was, you know, he has the ability to rotate out. He's got a great shot, but he also has, you know, a good mind to find the openings that are created when the pressure does go out to the flanks, that they're trying to take away Tage. And perhaps eventually that opens the one-timer back up.
I agree. And I think Chris Baker, based on his earlier appearance on the show, would probably agree as well, based on the fact that Chris looks at Quinn as the biggest difference maker among this 23 and under group, of which there is a long list of Sabres, and it doesn't matter about age, but we were just making it a little bit about it on today's show. I think Quinn, you think back to when he came back from the injury last year, and a few goals he had scored in succession were just different ways, you know? And it was like, wow, it really does speak to that versatility, almost the unpredictable. Like, the bumper position's fascinating because it's predictable and unpredictable all at the same time, because you can you're in the area to capitalize on some broken plays, right? Very quickly. And I think that's where Quinn, to me, is super exciting and shifty and creative and smart, but he's also such a gifted passer that he won't panic in those situations, right? And I can see him then creating a split second outlet to guys in better positions. So I'm fascinated, but I'm also fascinated to see how the defense plays a role in this power play, because Power and Byram are going to want their points too, right?
Yeah.
So how does that eat into first unit power plays that sometimes go deep into a second shift, if you will, you know, how quickly are they going to move on and give guys like Power and Byram opportunity there?
Yeah, and will you see a two defenseman look on one of the units? I imagine you probably will, and maybe it's a second unit. And then when you do have that, is there opportunity for movement? You know, maybe you see Rasmus Dahlin down low a little bit as opposed to at the point, and he's able to use his creativity in different ways that we haven't seen before. So I think there's just a lot on the table, and it's going to be interesting to see how a new coach looks.
Do you have because of how it played out in free agency and where the focus was, where has that created the most competition at forward, in your opinion?
So I see two spots. There's a top six, and we can assume maybe five of the top six, if that's fair. You know, you have your Paterka, Thompson, Tuck, whether or not that's a line, they had success together. And you have Cousins and Quinn. I think, you know, they've earned that going in at least. And then you have that vacancy, you know, left by Jeff Skinner. And there's options. I think, you know, Jason Zucker would be someone that comes to mind going in. He has a recent 20 plus goal season. He's got several of those on his resume. He's, you know, an accomplished goal scorer. But Zach Benson, is he ready to take another step there? Are one of these young players from Rochester, maybe, you know, they won't fit in the bottom six role, but maybe Yuri Kulik, it's top six or back to Rochester, you know? Mm-hmm. So that would be one. And then or Peyton Krebs, I mean, he's kind of settled into this, you know, two-way defensive bottom six center role. But, you know, he's a guy with first-round pedigree skill. I mean, maybe he moves back to the wing and, you know, finds some chemistry there in the top six.
Does your gut tell you any of the, you know, any of these less experienced players, the Roseans, Kuliks, Bensons of the world? Mm-hmm. Like, do you have an inkling that this is going to be an eye-opening camp?
It's tough. I mean, there could be more than one, but there doesn't seem like there's a lot of room for more than one. I want to say Kulik. I mean, for what the team might need in that spot, and for all his natural goal scoring skill, like it mm-hmm. might be a good fit. Whereas, you know, some of the other guys have maybe more developed into all around games that might fit further down the roster to start their careers and then, you know, develop from there.
Are you expecting any major transactions between now and the first preseason game, September 21st?
I mean, not this time of year. It's, you know, you see moves made, and we just saw one made last week, obviously, but that was, you know, a situation that people saw coming with Patrick Laine. Mm-hmm. I think my guess would be this late into the summer, this is probably your roster going in. And like I said, there were several veteran additions, and that's the other area I see competition is. You kind of have one extra, if you're not counting on those young guys, you kind of have one extra forward if amongst either the guys that were added or the guys mm-hmm. who are returning, who are regulars last year. So there's going to be competition if everyone's healthy for a spot in the lineup and, you know, moving up and down the lineup, of course.
Do you have a lock to play next to Rasmus Dahlin?
No, I think that's interesting to watch too, because, you know, the Sabres get Bowen Byram and he moves next to Dahlin, and it looks really exciting at, you know, at the start, and that's certainly a possibility. But maybe it also opens up the possibility for Owen Power to be next to Dahlin, and then you can have Bowen Byram, you know, as your second pair. Mm-hmm. If you look at the numbers, one, Rasmus Dahlin's numbers are great with every partner, or they're above 50%, you know, shot attempts wise and goals wise with most partners, mm-hmm. Which really speaks to him. But they're best with Owen Power. Now, some of that might be skewed because they're usually out in offensive situations historically.
Right. Yeah.
But it just speaks to the, you know, to the different possibilities. You can go Power Dahlin and have, you know, two offensive guys, Byram Dahlin, or you can go back to, you know, Dahlin Samuelsson, or even Dahlin Nokihara, you had good numbers last year too. So
yeah,
it's anyone's guess, but it's interesting to see what's on Lindy Ruff's mind when it comes to that, the top pair.
Great job with the promo and the segment today, and we'll see you soon. Good luck with the mailbag.
Thank you, Duffer.
Jordan LaBarber, Sabres.com. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We are less than a month away from the NHL preseason beginning. And of course, the Sabres' first home game is in October, and we want you there by way of a mini pack. Yes, indeed, they are available. Five games or more. Great savings. Ultimate flexibility. All you got to do is check out sabres.com/mini packs. All right. So thanks to Chris Baker and Jordan LaBarber for guesting on today's show. Marty Baron is off again tomorrow. Birthdays on this day. Balloons to Dua Lipa, 29. Pat Gillick, this one's for George, former GM of the Blue Jays in their World Series wins. He's 87. And Brock Faber, standout defenseman for the Wild, is 22. We'll see you tomorrow.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.